Okay, so we march onwards in our series today, and we're now at a very interesting point. We've skipped from the bar mitzvah and the bat mitzvah to engagement in our crash course of Jewish lifestyle. Now, there happen to be a few things that do happen in between, hopefully. There's graduation from middle school, there's graduation from high school, there's yeshiva, there's college, there's, you know, perhaps an internship, maybe a job or two, depending. So there are a few things that happen in between, but we're going to focus on the religious ceremonies as well. Of course, there's much room for a lot of religious involvement and input in between. But in terms of the milestones of life, we sort of drift on to this next stage. I want to start off by thanking our sponsors this morning. First of all, to Suri Stone, who is sponsoring this entire series. Thank you for supporting and being connected through this learning together. It's a continued pleasure. This morning as well is we are also learning Le'ilui Nishmas, Rabbi Daniel Rosenthal and Erwin Fish, Rosemary's husband of blessed memory, and Mechutzen, whose shiva is just finishing right now as we speak. Be'ezras Hashem, the neshamas should have an aliyah. God willing, and welcome back, Rosemary. It's wonderful to have you back here. I also want to thank Sandy and Ed Clark, who are sponsoring over two yard sites. First, the 33rd yard site of Sandy's grandfather, Mr. Chaim Hellman, Chaim Ben Klonimus, and also the 41st yard site of Ed's grandmother, Mrs. Sadie Clark, Zissel Bas Moshe Asher Zelig. The years may march on, but the memories don't change, and that's... it's important that there's somebody to remember and somebody to continue to tell the story. Be'ezras Hashem, their story should always continue. So we start this next stage, and you say, well, is engagement even a Jewish thing in the first place? Engagement is perhaps one of the most complicated and highly charged times in life. There's a lot over here. What does the Torah say about this at all? So the truth is that a lot of times when we look at engagement, we look towards a model which the Torah does talk about, which is called a rusin. That's usually what we refer to as the model. What is a rusin? So it seems that it's some sort of connection or some sort of commitment between a young man and woman. So for example, the Torah talks about this, unfortunately, in the situation of infidelity. So the Torah tells us in Sefer Devarim, ki en na'ara besulam orasala ish umotza ish ba'ir roshachavima. Let's say there's a woman who is ma'orasa, betrothed to a man, but then she has a relationship with somebody else. That's considered as a adultery. That's why which means to say that a rusin is some stage of commitment before the marriage, and that stage is now an indication of connection between the two of them, so much so that anything in between would be considered adultery. That's what people usually talk about. And the reason why people usually talk about this is because the Erusin, in the times of the Torah and in the times of the Gemara, Mishnah and Gemara, was a stage which usually was about a year in advance of what we call marriage. The word for marriage the Torah uses is Nisuin, or Konsa, bringing her into his house. That's where that would be later. Erusin would not be at that stage yet. So there would be this earlier stage of commitment and a later stage of consummation or really living together. And so we kind of sometimes you see how those terminologies used together. The truth is that's not the way it works anymore. But let's just do a little bit of background quickly. So Kiddushin, what was Kiddushin? So how was that commitment formulated? So the Mishnah tells us at the beginning of Kiddushin that there are three methods which were used. One is one was kesef shtar ubiya, which means to say kesef is where the man will commit to the woman something of value and she accepts it. The man will give her a document indicating his commitment to her, and she'll like thank you, and she'll accept it. And the third one is a consensual relationship between the two of them. The Gemara makes it very clear today that the third option is not the way that that things are done today. That's not an acceptable, morally acceptable way that things are done. And in fact, it's a punishable offense if that is the case. The Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Yud Beis our base tells us. But let's turn to the first two. So what would really happen? So let's say a young man and a young woman are going out, or their parents have made an arrangement, whichever method of the whole process we're going to talk about, and they realize, their parents realize that it's time to get married. So in the days of yore, what happens is that he would give her something of value and say to her, "Arei at mekudeshet li b'tabazu," or whatever it is that he gave her, something of value. And by her accepting it, her consent, they now are in a stage called erusin, of betrothal. And then they would wait 12 months, sort of prepare themselves, get ready for the wedding, and also set up their home. And then later on, there would be nisuin. And nisuin would be when either they're secluded, they start living together, and that's sort of the marriage. That would be the chuppah. That would be later on. What we do today is, in a certain sense, we abridge that whole process. What do? We push together the erusin, which we also call kiddushin, and the nisuin into one ceremony. So the ring-giving ceremony under the chuppah is really the original erusin. And then we just read the ksuba in between, just so to create a little bit of a break. That's an inconsequential halachic moment, but it's just to create a little bit of a break to describe the responsibilities of husband to wife. And then we go on to nisuin, which is them standing under the chuppah. In some traditions, they say they have a talis over them, which is part of that, and then they go and seclude themselves as a husband and wife for a few minutes as well. So that becomes, we put the two ceremonies together. That becoming the case, so you say, well, is there anything left for engagement? So like, at this point in time, then really it could just be, is like, and there was this situation in the Five Towns recently, right? Anybody remember there was a wedding over last there was an engagement party last summer, and that turned into a wedding, right, at Sardic Temple, and so it was definitely very surprising. But like, let's say, so is engagement really a thing, or is this really just a secular experience that we've adopted for ourselves, being assimilated into the values of the Western society around us? So the truth is actually it is a thing in halakha. Even without the erusin being separated from the nisuim like it used to be in the times of the Gemara. And by the way, why that faded is a matter of conjecture. So some would suggest that it's just people who are much poorer. It was harder to arrange two ceremonies and to have this whole kiddushin ceremony and nisuim ceremony. Things are the opposite today. Thank God for a lot of Jews living in the West. But being in those days, I said, let's collapse it into one. But what do we do at the beginning? Is there a beginning, and how long does that need to be? So the truth is, there is supposed to be another beginning, even absent of the erusin. And this process, it will look what the Gemara describes on the bottom of page 2. The Gemara says in Kedushin Yud Beis Amud Beis, it says, "Derav menagid." Rav would punish a person al demekadesh b'shuka, a person who just get married in the marketplace. Val demekadesh b'bia, val demekadesh b'loy shiduche. That a person would using the third. The option of kiddushin, he felt was inappropriate, and then also a person who just would get married without a shiduche. Now that doesn't mean without a shadchan. What that means to say shiduche means an arrangement. It actually comes to a shadach. Actually, according to one of the Aramaic translations, comes to the word calm, right? Which means to say there needs to be some sort of arrangement which generates calm. What does that mean? So on the most basic level, there's many people who describe this. Rashi says on the top of page 3, he says, "What's b'de shadich? Shediber ba koidem lakein. V'nis ratzesh this kadosh lo." First, it has to be that they themselves, he speaks to her, he says, "I'd like to get married to you." She agrees. There has to be some sort of agreement. And then accompanying that, the Gemara describes as well, that there is some sort of bilateral commitment that they make towards the marriage as well. So what Rav is saying is, just for a couple to suddenly fall into marriage like that, that's not appropriate. That's not the way things should be done. Beloy shiduche, there needs to be some sort of degree of sitting together. Let's figure this out. Who's going to do what and plan things out? It's not the same degree of connection and commitment as a rusin would have been when it was earlier. But it's saying let's figure this out, let's plan this out as well. And the Shulchan Aruch says this. The Shulchan Aruch says in Evan Ezar, top of page 3, it says, "Afilu kodsha bekesav v'shtar." If a young man decides to get married through the process of kesef or shtar, So through giving her an item of value or giving her a commitment in writing, and she accepts it. Im lo shidech techila or shekidesh v'shuk makin oisai makas marjus l'mukadeshes. It just happenstance, you know. He's at camp and he says, "Oh, I'm going to marry you with a slice of pizza." You know, these kind of things happen from time to time, right? It's a little bit of a problem, right? So he says the erus and the kiddushin could be effective, but that's not, that person should be punished for that. That's not appropriate. And the Ramah says, "Yeshom she'ein makino im kiddush v'kesel shtar afil b'shuk v'loy shiduchim v'loy ro'isi mi'amai she'ukuboy mi'shikiddush v'loy shiduchim." He says, "I haven't seen the punishment exacted," says the Ramah, "but that's not the way to do things. So there needs to be some sort of shiduchin or shiduche, which is this arrangement as well."
So from the Ramah, that Marcus Margus was still Marcus Margus.
Yeah,
was still
I was going to say, well, Warsaw seems to still be doing things, right? So it seems to be that there's some degree of we'll call internal implementation is over there. So there needs to be some degree of commitment, and that commitment has an import from both sides. It's first of all that the two of them agree to get married, which we'll call that engagement. Will you? Absolutely. And then some sort of a commitment as well. Yeah, sorry.
Well, what happened if it doesn't work out after the Arusin?
In terms of?
Do you need a get?
Yes. If it was a Arusin, yes. So in a Arusin, there's a commitment, there's a ksuba already from the Arusin side. But because we put the Arusin under the chuppah now, so it doesn't usually happen that there's a divorce between the two, right?
Right.
But the question is from engagement, right? So from engagement, let's say from shidduchei, right? Then that's we'll call it a broken engagement, and that has financial implications, which the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch talk about, you know, like who keeps what. So those are that's discussed in great length as well. But the shidduchim does not require a get, but from erusin it would. So that's why, in fact, that's why when the Torah talks about ma'araha ma'arasa, when it talks about somebody who's in the stage of erusin, that means to say that that person is essentially quasi-married, right? In the kudeshes, and is treated as such. Yes?
When you said about value, something of value, he gives her something of value, was it those days perhaps a cow or chicken? Or it had to be jewelry?
So it's a good question. Generally speaking, we'll get there hopefully next week when we talk about marriage. But generally speaking, the custom has evolved to be the already at the time of the Rishonim, at least the interpretation of they talk about tachshitin, which is jewelry. But we're going to see that the simplicity of the jewelry is important because it needs to be that's of obvious value to both sides. So once you start getting into fake materials or even things which have stones or engraving, there might be assumptions, let's say, on either side. But let's say that the young lady says, "Oh my gosh, you got me a 24 carat, something like that, and that's how you marry," and turns out to be cubic zirconium, and so in a certain sense, her expectations of what he was committing to her as a symbol of his commitment might be undermined. We don't want to have any questions surrounding that, so that's why it's turned to be a simple aspect of jewelry as well. Now, it's very important to give gifts both directions. They should be done many, many times, but for the sake, it's going to be the more simpler of things, yes.
Was Tanaim Erusin?
We'll get there in a second, yeah. We'll get there in a second to the Tanaim. Yes.
Divorce after engagement without any physical relationship, would that also disqualify the Kohen in the future?
Good question. I don't remember. I'm sorry. I'm in the middle of service right now, just going through myself, but I don't remember offhand. So there happens to be another few things that go along around here, and that is there is a notion of sivlonos, which seems to be some gifts which were sent. The Mishnah describes in about Basra in the ninth parak that after in the original erusin there was a notion of sivlonos, and those sivlonos took the form of jewelry, took the form of foods that let's say there would be in the old days. Remember how it would be? You'd have a erusin, and then you'd have this. So we'll have our betrothal, and then we'll have a wedding later on. So what would happen is groom would be responsible to send gifts to her and to her father's house, and oftentimes he'd come over to partake in it. He'd send food and cater the meal, and after the erusin, and come and spend the time with them as well. And this would be a notion of called sivlonos. The discussion becomes, is today, where let's say that's not really happening in the kiddushin phrase, because we're We're at the chuppah. We'll get to that later about the expectation of gifts. But what happens in the shidduche phase? So let's say there's an engagement which is made. So it seems that we follow a similar pattern that he has the responsibility to give her a gift. And following the way it's described by the Rashbam and the Bartanura on that Mishnah, it does refer to some sort of jewelry, some sort of gift to her as well. Does it have to be a ring? The answer is no. Does it have to be diamond? It may be a girl's best friend, and it is Western convention today. But that's not a Jewish convention per se. He should be giving her a gift, right? But if it's going to mean to say taking out another mortgage before even talking about the marriage, that's not the way to go. And with the greatest respect to all the diamond merchants out there and diamond cutters, and there were lots of Jews on 47th Street. But at the same time, there are alternatives. But it has become a convention today. I was actually just speaking to a few diamond dealers recently. The market is taking a bit of a blow right now because of lab-grown diamonds right now, which are almost indistinguishable, more perfect than it's the same material as a diamond, and it's taking the market from a different angle. What is interesting about this, just as for those who are interested, if you ever read any of H.G. Wells, science fiction writer, the end of the 19th century, so he wrote many things. Famously, he wrote The War of the Worlds, Time Machine, all those things which, you know, but one of the short stories you read, these are very disturbing stories, is about a fellow who invents a lab-grown diamond. And he can't sell it for the world because people will think he stole it, because there's no possibility. And he sort of dies with his diamonds. You know, he's not able to. But today we're there. The science fiction has arrived. So it's be there. But be it as it may, we need to make sure that we understand and perhaps, you know, appreciate the Western convention. But that is not our convention. Our convention is gifts need to be given. And the gifts are from groom to fiancé. That is important, and it is achieved by the ring, but it doesn't have to be specifically that way in the same way. But it is another way of concretizing the relationship. The one thing which one should be aware of is to be a little careful around the ceremony, as the Rama points out in Shulchan Aruch in Evan Ezer in Simon Nun, that the Rama says is that, oh, and this is a long discussion in Halacha, is should we be concerned that ring giving might be confused with a marriage, kiddushin, erusin? Maybe that becomes, then we've just sort of recreated the old method by that level of giving. So the Rama says we do not need to be concerned about this. Ultimately, he says that in the end of the day, I'll take a look at the top of page 4. Yesh orim dechol sivlona sheshalach miyad achar hashiduchin. After a commitment or engagement, we don't have to be worried about yom or yomayim, a day or two after the engagement. Ein lachush lahem klal. You don't have to worry about them. Afilu sholach lo achar kach, gam kein dem achar sholach lo tchila onu royin dem savel, v'achar mekadesh v'ein choshin nesivlonos. We know that he's already made the commitment. Why would he be marrying her 2 days later? Like, why would he be deciding that he's going to, like, marry her suddenly now? They have a date, April 13th. They've got they've got the all. Why would he be marrying her? And then he says another thing, which is the practice today as well. V'yesh amrim shim lo sholach lo hasivlonos be'edim ein choshin. If you don't have witnesses, then it isn't a thing, which is usually the way it is. If you think about how the engagement works, right? He gets down on his right knee, right? His friend's over there taking the picture. There's the rose petals, right? And he pulls out the ring, right? But the point is that there's no witnesses. You need to make sure it's not an official ceremony, right? Make it an unofficial ceremony. And that's usually the way it is. Because then as an unofficial ceremony, it's very clear that this is a gift. This is not kiddushin. This is not marriage. And that would be sufficient. If it becomes a thing where it's all the guys' friends and all the girls' friends and the whole thing like that, you have to be careful, just not to make sure that it's not that way. But the Ramos says that's not what we're doing, so it shouldn't be confused as such. Yes.
What is the so-called vort? How does that fit in?
Okay, we'll get there in a second. So are there ceremonies with that are surrounding this? So Chaya aptly asked, and it makes sense because Chaya has got Hasidic blood in her. Which is in the Hasidic world, it's still in effect today, and that is that in association with this notion of shidduche, of this idea of commitment, comes this notion that there's a commitment by both families to this process. So although the Gemara says this can be achieved verbally, right? So he sits down in a handshake or whatever it is, they, you know, this is going to be a even a handshake's more than verbal, but they, let's say that, that every it comes to an agreement on this. The truth is that it has evolved, and as the Shulchan Aruch talks about, listen to how the Shulchan Aruch says in the middle of page 4, Kesher Roitzim, Na'asos Havtachos L'Shidduchim. When you want to make your commitments in this process called Shidduchim, which we call engagement today, we try to make it in a way that it's not just in the air. We try to make it in a way that it's not just a verbal agreement. So we say that everybody should be committed in a way they need to actually commit themselves in a way that is in writing. So they make commitments to each other, which are going to be dependent on getting to the chuppah, and it needs to be done in such a way. And in fact, the Ramah goes on to describe, or the Shomra goes on to describe, that there's in fact a knas associated with this, meaning there's a penalty if this is broken, which is also committed to on both sides. And in fact, the document is goes to both of them. You know, there's two documents. Actually, I was just at a wedding last week. Rav Daniel Feldman was the Masada Kedushin. Rav Shechta and Rav Willig were the Eidim, Eidim Kedushin, so they were definitely married. And it was Rav Feldman, of course, is a Talmud of Rav Shechta, and he wrote two sets of Tanaim at the Chuppah, and he sent one to her side, which is what the Shulchan Aruch says. If this is a bilateral commitment and both sides are agreeing to it, then you need to make sure that both sides have the documentation of such. That would be the practice. And in fact, this was the practice in the Hasidic worlds. It is the practice in the Hasidic worlds today. And we'll see why in just a second that it doesn't seem to be as much in the Sephardic and Ashkenazi world as to the same degree. But what had happened is people would get engaged. And the engagement would be a sit-down meal primarily for both sides of the family. And at this meal, this document would be signed, the document of the what would be called the Tanaim, which means the conditions. And who does it govern? So it usually governs, actually, the families. They're both families and how they're going to interact with each other financially, what commitments they're going to be. I don't know if they put in the acronym FLOP. I don't know if that was there in the actual Tanaim. But if you look at the older Tanaim, and you can still get them, they have a space to talk about what the financial commitments are, what side X is doing, what side Y is doing, and it's detailed. And you say, well, like, why are we getting into granular details? The answer is because, unfortunately, we need to sometimes. It's important to the more transparency, the less surprises, the happier the wedding. So it's important to have these kind of conversations to do these things. So what would happen? That when this was done in the primary way that we execute legal documents in halacha, and how is that? Not through a signature, but through a kinyan, right? So again, there's different formalities and different conventions in different societies. Today, a signature is sufficient in many contracts, yeah, legally, and an electronic signature today. For halacha, that also does have value. It has that consequence, but the primary way of doing things is a kinyan. You'll notice in the Sephardi world, when it comes to, let's say, the ksuba later on, they involve another few kinyans. So you'll notice, if you ever watched a Sephardi ksuba being finished under the chuppah, you'll notice the rabbi will shake hands with the chosan, because that's another form of commitment as well as through a handshake. But be it as it may, a kinyan is sufficient, and that kinyan is ratified in the presence of witnesses. In this case, the chosan and the kala are not actually involved. It's really dad of one family representing dad of another family. It doesn't have to be a dad if there's no dad. And then what happens is moms actually break a dish as well. This is done to consummate this. And in fact, the Taz says, regarding the ceremony, is that it's important, therefore, to have the people, notables of the town, not notaries, but notables, in the sense, Ed, we'll always invite you. But the point is that notables is people of distinguished, like yourself, Ed. But the point is, it's not a legal thing, but a notable means to say that it gives consequence to this. So it's not just the families. You'll have people of the town, you know, the mayor, the this, that, will come. and the rabbi will come, and them being there also gives gravitas to the ceremony as well. So it isn't just a fly-by-night, and sometimes you ask one of those people to read it as a reflection of the fact that this is a commitment. Yes.
Prenuptial.
We'll get there hopefully next time. Yes.
What actually is the reason why the dish is broken?
Good question. So there's a number of reasons. So that's the top of the next page. There's three reasons given. We'll take a look at the last two. On page 5, it says, "Sefer Likutim Aran Kosav Debozer Shemashavrim Klei Cheres." So you'll notice that's different to a chuppah where you break a glass dish or glass cup at the tanaim stage, at the early part of the engagement. They would break a earthenware dish. I remember I was at a hall, which was like the first time they were holding weddings, and they said, "We need a dish," you know, and they wrapped up something in corral. It was really tough. And there was no hammer. So you should have seen the mothers were going at it on this chair. You're like, it was like such a great ad for Corel. Right, so it wasn't working. So it's supposed to be earthenware. Why earthenware? Says the Likutei Maharan. He says, "B'shas ha'shiruch, v'ramzim la'adam u'mazkir no'aso sh'yesh gehinam, l'man yizkor bozeh lo yeh koruch achar ta'avosu v'yikarash ha'shmo v'zivugo koroi." It's kind of like it's almost like a symbolism of earth. Earthenware is something which is sort of made from the clay of the ground. And so a reminder that we're all here for a very short period of time, and we're all don't make this relationship simply a relationship of lust and material necessity. There's a higher calling over here. Just remember, we're all returning to the same 6 feet under, right? So it's sort of that kind of reminder, which reminds us, if this is less about Yerushalayim, which we'll see under the chuppah, but this is more of a sort of a wake up at the beginning of the process. But he quotes the Sefer Todos Aaron. So again, he's a Hasidish Svarim. Belikutim kosav b'shem abal shem tov zechuso yagen aleinu. In the last paragraph, hatam loma b'shas sheduchim shovrin kli cheres u'shas nisuin kli zechuches. Why is it that it's earthenware at the engagement and it's glass at the wedding? So glass can be repurposed. Earthenware cannot be corrected after it's been through the kiln. Once it's broken, it's broken, which means, said the Baal Shem Tov, says, it's more consequential breaking a tnayim than it is of even sort of going back on a wedding. And what's interesting, just in terms of the glass, actually, when we went to Tzfat a year ago, and there's a lady over there who makes these little glass, who makes glass cups. And people take them for the wedding. They break them. They send it back to her, and then she makes a cup with the shards of glass. She melts it back in, and that'll be like a memorabilia for the wedding. So you can repurpose glass, right? So, but when it comes to shidduchim, when it comes to breaking a tnayim, more consequential, there seems to be some sort of, besides the knas which you talked about, there seems to be some sort of cherem as well. It's seen as a bad thing to break a tnayim, which is why in many communities the custom has been to either remove the tnayim altogether to avoid breaking such a thing. Let's make it less formal. Right, let's make it less formal to avoid that, as an example, or and perhaps a ceremonial way. What do? We fast forward the tanaim to the wedding ceremony itself. The svarim don't do this, but the reason why it's done at the wedding, then, in a certain sense, is it's acknowledging the process, but without entering into the level of commitment that would be a problem with breaking. Because listen, the engagements break, and for good reason many times, and so one doesn't want to be incurring that what the Baal Shem Tov was talking about kabbalistically, whatever that means, that is sort of irreparable, that's why it's done as it is, which would mean to say, and therefore Rav Moshe Feinstein says when talking about this, is so therefore we need to have a text which is therefore reflective of the fact that it's more ceremonial than financial. Right, so the tanaim that we're supposed to use on the day of the wedding is therefore much more a general description in nature than it is about the specifics. So we shouldn't be using the one with all those extra lines which describe what each family is doing. But it is important to be able to do it. So here is actually the text that Rav Moshe uses. It's on page 6. This is what it's found in a sefer, which is called the Nachlas Shiva. And the Nachlas Shiva goes through this process of Shidduchim. And in this he quotes this over here. And you can see it's very general, but it's important just to be aware of how this works. So it first of all describes a magid meireshis achrish so yitain shem tov l'sheiris l'divrei ha'bris v'atanaim shenidbaru v'husnu bein ha'nishnei atzadim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, should bless and give a shem tov to this process which is made between the two sides. And who are the two sides? Ha'ani mitzad ha'echad, and it describes dad number one, ha'omer mitzad benoy ha'chason, who stands on behalf of the groom. Remember, groom is not active in this. He may look in, but it's really dad number one taking and doing a kinyan, which is his form of executing his responsibility. Mitzad ha'sheni, and on the second side, ha'arav, and this refers to dad number two or representative number two. In a lot of cases, not there are some cases where there's no dad, right? So there's no dad on the other side, right? So it can be mom, it can be another agent. There's other people who can do. You have to obviously change the language as is necessary. Ha'omer mitzad bitoy. Hakala Besula Maras, and then it describes who's standing on behalf of the young lady. And what does it say? So now the language that Rav Moshe uses is Asher Kfar Niskaimu Kol Achilvim Mitzad Achoson Hakala V'Kein Niskaimu Kol Achilvim Mitzad Hakala Le'Achoson. So at this point in time, as we're about to get to the marriage, we want to make sure, we want to ratify that everything that has been committed has been paid. Everything's been committed, has been paid. So you say, it doesn't sound so romantic. It's like, yeah, well, you can't really have romance without having commitment, right? So it needs to have been achieved. Otherwise, there's only going to be angst and agita. So that means to say, now, in the original Tanaim, it would be, no, this is what I'm committing to in order to fulfill by the wedding. This is, no, at this point in time, all that left is to, Ein lohem, ze al ze shum ta'anos utviyos. And there's no longer any problems between the two families. All that's left, all that's left is chuppah and kiddushin, which are those two stages we talked about before. Kedas Moshe Yisrael, that's the fine print. That means to say, as attached to all the halachas that are appropriate for this. But Yom X on the Chodesh X, and that's the day of the marriage itself. So that might be the next day, because let's say it's in the afternoon where the Tanaim are being done, and then it's going to be sunset. And the chuppah, and the procession, which will take 2.5 hours, is going to be a lot of time. Definitely not full, so maybe referring to the next day. And no one is going to be withholding any of the commitments they made. Right, so I said I'm going to play for the band, but really, I'm still withholding because I didn't really like him so much. No. I'm not paying overtime. No, you're going to do everything. That's it. And everyone's going to act like Yirei Hashem Yisbarach. I always ask when I meet a Chassan and Kala, I say, do you know what the time is? So the Chassan kind of vaguely knows that they need to stop eating for a moment, while their friends, the time is red, And the Kala has no idea, of course, because she's not there. But it's good. So I go through, let's read what this is about. And it's important to know this because sometimes knowing this about this at the beginning of engagement is important to set the tone for the engagement as well. I have been at weddings where I've officiated, where I said, look, I can't let you guys sign the Tanaim if you're not going to make up. So it's not obvious that, when there's been so much pain, I at one wedding I had to have the two dads shake hands and say, listen, we're going to let bygones be bygones in order to sign this. I said, because I'm not signing the Tanaim until you actually are committed to the words inside you, because otherwise it means nothing. So it does have import, but hopefully we don't get to that. Hopefully it's not necessary. But this is this is sort of setting the tone, not just for the chos and the kala, but for the families themselves, which is really important. And then, of course, that's executed and is signed. David, yes?
Why are the plates broken by the mothers?
Not sure how the conversation became. I see it as already playing a role. Dads, the dads, Kenyan moms. I don't know.
They wanted to make the jewelry out of it.
What was that?
They wanted the jewelry. I started to know him.
There you go. So a lot of people did. My sister,
Hasidic origin, but not practicing.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I remember when my sister had time. Moshe's time was not as popular.
People did this.
The document said, this side's going to give so much clothes for young people.
Yeah.
This was an off-the-shelf standard time.
Yeah. If you go to Judaica Plus and you ask for time, you will find that time is available.
Yeah.
And it has lots of spaces and lines. And it says this side, there's A list inside.
It had no lines. It was just a format.
Oh, yeah, no, so
the form said the groom size committee for clothing for this and this for that. But this was the standard.
And that's the way it was, and that's what the Taz says as well.
What if one of the fathers is not religious? What not Jewish?
Commitments are commitments. I don't know. In the end of the day, so this is financial commitments of the two families. You can have agents do it, but again, you have to know what you're committing to. Again, the same way that I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to sign anything I haven't seen and committed to myself. I'm not going to have an agent do that either. But the truth is that today, a lot of people don't do this. They'll do it ceremoniously at the end of the engagement process to avoid the breaking of its name. But instead, what has evolved is, as was described beforehand, is the notion of some sort of party. Now, oftentimes there'll be a l'chaim, but a l'chaim is usually meant to be like a smaller thing. It's like, you know, the couple just didn't get engaged. She'll come to her dad's house, and there'll be family there, and it'll literally be a l'chaim. It'll say mazel tov. It's usually a smaller kind of event these days, you know, sort of with the shh, don't say anything arrangements 3 weeks in advance. You know, it's become a little bit more, a little bigger. But then if we want to do more of a party, we often call that a vort. And so that's not, it used to be called tonight, but if one's not doing the tonight, it's a vort. And kishmoy kainu, it should be that somebody says a devar Torah. And in fact, those who took it seriously will actually have a food and a meal there, and it'll be a vort. And a lot of times it used to be a sit-down thing, and the chosin had something to say. And it wasn't just about drinks and dancing, it was also just a more formalized ceremony, but it was less, the commitments, obviously, the family start talking to each other, but it's going to be less formalized in the face of tonight. Paula, yeah.
What about the prenup?
Yeah, you know, I want to get there perhaps next week, because there's so much to do. It's a complicated topic. It is a newer thing, but I'd like to do a deal with it more comprehensively. We don't have the time right now.
By the way, it's a Meshem Yatzah Dover by Rivka. I love it. Meshem Yatzah Dover, the Vart.
Very good. That's, oh, thank you. That's a very good vort. The people should have something to say, and the chassan should really have something to say. Let me just get a little bit of more of here. Is that there are other things which are important to take care of during the engagement, which people are not aware of oftentimes, and that is the Shulchan Aruch talks about this in multiple places, and actually in Chosh Shemish, but not in Evin Ezer, and that is, take a look at the top of page 7. It's the Shulchan Aruch, actually the Ramah, in Chosh Mishpat, Kuf Pei Hei, tells us, Hashadchan, you see with our guys in the second line on top of page 7, Hashadchan, the person who is the matchmaker, Have Kanoi Sarsur, is an agent, Vim Hashadchan Roitze, Shi Yishalmu Loi Miyad, Schar Shadchan Nusoi, V'abalim Einan Roitze Nushalim, Ada Nisuim Toloi B'minag HaMedina. So the agent, which is in this case the Shadchan, wants to be paid at the beginning of the engagement period. And they say, no, we will pay you when the marriage has happened, when you've pulled through. Then it depends on what the minag is of that particular locale. And the Shulchan goes to this through this, and it treats it as any other sarasu, which has a financial responsibility. What does that mean? That means it's important. This is sometimes forgotten, is to pay the Shadchan. And the Shadchan it could be an official matchmaker. It could be a friend. It could be somebody who was the go-between, the interlocutor of this relationship. And it's important. They, as in any other agency, how do agencies work? Agencies work is they connect you to the best possible options in what it could be a travel agent, Lahavdil, right? So what are they doing there? They're giving you access, and they're doing all the legwork to make sure you have a flight. Lahavdil here, you have a person who you perhaps wouldn't have met somebody else through, or your kids would not have met somebody else through. They do the legwork, which is often very long conversations at night between very young people who have no idea what's going on with life yet, and lots of doubts and backwards and forwards, and this is a lot of time, and that time is worth money. And so therefore, one has to make sure to pay the shadchan. Now, it turns out to be who's responsible for this. La halacha, it's actually both the chosan and the kala. They're expected to pay. Each of us have to pay half of the shadchan fee. But today, generally speaking, with a lot of people getting engaged very young, they don't have the wherewithal. And generally speaking, the parents take care of that, but it should be split between the two families. When is paid, as the Rama already indicates, is dependent on convention. So meaning to say, depending on when this is. A lot of people wait till later. Some people say at the beginning of the engagement process, let's do this. The reason why it's complicated is because what happens if the engagement does break? Then so, okay, so then you know, was that a successful shidduch? But there's also as to what the convention is depends on the locale as well. So meaning to say, I think when I was asking around, I believe in the Vard of Queens says something like $1,800, and I think the five towns it's more depending on the convention. And then you have people who have their own rates, right? So it becomes complicated. So let's say a person who says, if you enlist my services, my rate is $10,000, you know, as an example, right? So if they agree to that at the beginning, then yes. But if they only reveal their rates after everything is said and done and the lachaim is had, that's not necessarily the case if they didn't know about this and they weren't committed to this as well. But if, let's say, there was a person who was helping them out but did not quantify. So let's say it was a friend, it was a neighbor, it was who got involved, and they got involved in this process. And then afterwards you say, it was just a favor. Meaning say, you say it was just a favor. Well, that's not the way it works. They have to say, "I forgive my fee for it to be a favor." You can't forgive their fee for them, right? So it's considered a responsibility of the families themselves. If the families don't have the financial means for this, the responsibility does fall back on the shoulders of the chasn. This is something if they can't even do now, they should do afterwards. I've actually had the question a number of years later. People say, "I didn't know about this. I wasn't aware of this. Should we?" And the answer is yes. Yes, if you haven't figured it out yet, you can still go back and make sure that the shadchan is paid. The shadchan may say, forget about it. That's fine. I can forgive it. But don't you forgive it for them. Without this, and it's seen as also a simon bracha as well. Are there any protocols for seeing each other during engagement? So in the more modern world, people are like, what are you talking about? But as you go to the more yeshivish world, there are what's called gedarim. Gedarim is to say, is how often should young men and young women see each other? So you say, what kind of business is this? And the truth is that it is an important concept. So depending on how long that engagement period is and how proximate they are to each other, if it's different cities, well, that's one thing. But if, let's say, they're living in the same neighborhood, they're going to be seeing each other, you know, every day, this is a relationship which becomes complicated because in a certain sense, you now are spending time with somebody you want to spend the rest of your life with. And you know that they want to spend the rest of their lives with you. That's a very heady and overwhelming feeling. And at the same time, there's a glass ceiling called Shmiras Negia, right? So you're not married yet. So that makes things just a little more complicated. And so it's important to have some degree of space which is created. So this is not a halachic framework. So you will not find this in Shulchan Aruch, but it's common sense is that a couple should sit down at the beginning of engagement and say, there's going to be a lot of things we need to speak to each other about, and we've got a lot of things to plan. So let the planning, okay, that's one department. But let's say it's not just planning. It's going out to play mini golf. It's going out to hang out and do a walk on the boardwalk, all those things. Is it going to be one time a week, two times a week? What are we going to do? And so there's also, you create a space of suspense and excitement, and you're also not getting into complicated territory as well. In Torah thought, perhaps we'll leave with this as well. And that is that we usually use the model of a Rusin because that was the way it was used at the time of the Torah. And the most profound description of this to me is the description at the beginning of Hosea. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually is speaking to the northern kingdom of Israel at the time, and they're just not living up to their standards. They're shortly about to be exiled because of centuries of institutionalized, nationalized infidelity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he then turns to Hosea and says, Hosea as a prophet, I want you to marry this woman who is a woman of ill repute and have children with her. Does this happen? Is it a metaphor? Very complicated. Have a children, and these children are called children without compassion, and then Hashem says, well, can you now send her out? And she has infidelity under him, and is this going? And the complexity of relationships that Hashem says I have with the nation of Israel, you know, I married them lechtech acharav amidbar eretz lo zeruah, and we had this time of commitment and engagement, and we got married, and then like Knesset Israel found other deities, right? The Canaanite, they went to bed with the Canaanite gods, and And there was you know, there was Baal Peor and there was Molech and all these other folks in the Canaanite pantheon. Why not? Ideologically, at the beginning, it was really out of necessities. We just want rain for our crops, right? So we're just going to hedge. So we'll pay off the Canaanite gods whatever they need. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and I love you, but what are you doing? And so after this, in the second Pekosh Hashem says, I'll take you back. I'll take you back after all, everything you did and ignored in our relationship. And this is the first two prakim of Hosea. It's a very painful set of prakim to read. And at the end of that is very famously where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says three commitments to Israel, which is Ve'arastich li la'olam, I will betroth you forever. Ve'arastich li b'tzedek v'mishva l'ches rachim. And this betrothal will be based on tzedek and mishpat, which is din, and chesed and rachim, which is mercy. That'll be these two pillars. Ve'arastich li be'emunah v'yadada, Hashem will be with faithfulness. Faithfulness to me, faithfulness from me to you, and you to me. That's the basis for our renewal of our relationship, and that in fact is what when men put on their tefillin, there's three rings which are wrapped around the center finger, and the custom is to say these three psukim, one with each ring, right? Relating to the idea of it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving the engagement ring, giving the gift to us, right? And a reminder of the responsibilities that comes with. But so it's important to remember the last two, which is that the engagement requires tzedek and mishpat and chesed and rachvim, right? There's times to stand on principle, and there's times not to stand on principle, the latter being the more. And the idea of faithfulness. Faithfulness doesn't just mean physically, it means emotionally and socially too, right? It's no longer appropriate just to speak to anyone else in the same way, as well. There's faithfulness to this relationship. But the first one is what strikes me as the most profound, and that is Hashem says he wants an internal erusin with us, an internal engagement, so to speak, with us as well, which comes back to precisely the uniqueness and the artificial nature of engagement itself. And that is, engagement is this incredible time of romance, right? And so it's this time where, you know, you so anticipate, you so can't wait to see your fiance, and it's so exciting every time he turns the corner, she turns the corner, we see each other. It's so powerful, such an moving time. But it's not real. It's not real life yet, right? There aren't mortgages. There aren't, you know, there isn't garbage to be taken out. There aren't kids in the picture. It's not real life yet, right? It's a wonderful time. It's a time of anticipation and excitement. But like tachlis, like, let's see what it's really about when the rubber meets the road. But sometimes when the rubber meets the road and it's real and the commitments and the responsibility is real, then we forget about that initial excitement and experience as well. And it takes me back to I once went to a marriage workshop given by John and Julie Gottman, leading world marriage therapists. They live in Washington State, and they've even coined the Gottman method of marriage therapy, and they were speaking to therapists, and a few Smicha students got to come in as well at a Nefesh conference, like 800 people at this conference, and they were describing the methods in therapy and so on, and they're describing when they see a marriage on the rocks and what are the four signs for this, and can you rehabilitate this as well, and then they were doing some not role playing, but Julie is the therapist, John is the researcher, and she was showing some videos of a couple that had consented to go through this, and she's showing this is what this looks like, and this is what, and it was really, 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 really very instructive. But one of the things that they said is, when you see a relationship which is on the rocks, when you see a relationship which is going through a really tough time, and one of the questions they ask is tell me how you first met. Now, tell me how you first met. And so there's, like, you know, two versions of how that goes. You know, one version could be like, you know, and they're in the middle of an argument, and it's a little bit of an acrimonious time. So one version could go is, they'll sort of like, you know, she'll lift her eyes and sort of like think and say, you know, I remember it was so funny. I was actually supposed to be going out with a friend, but then like he mixed up, and then I saw you, and it was funny because I never thought in my wildest dreams that I'd even say yes to you, and we went out, and remember the taxi, you know, dropped us off of the wrong block, and you stepped in the puddle, and it was just remember, and then he says, yeah, it was funny because then when we got back, it was 1 o'clock, we thought it was 12 o'clock, I hadn't changed the clocks yet, and they started like laughing about that experience. Then the other way it can go is like, she'll say like, and I can't believe you arrived at my house in the green sweater. I never thought I'd live that down, you know. And then what happens is the cynicism sort of penetrates their, we'll call their now cynicism penetrates their remembrance of their first meeting. He says you can rehabilitate a relationship in the former case and not in the latter, usually. Because if there is a bedrock of that, that moment of sort of that, that innocent moment of connection and time they spent together, you can build off of that. You can start there. But if already that has been poisoned by the cynicism and pain and disappointment in each other that goes back to that initial moment, it's very hard to rehabilitate. And so Hashem says, Ve'erastich li le'olam. Is I want you to be committed and we're going to be married, but I wanted to also have that eternal excitement that still lives on in this relationship from day one as well. And in order to have that, you need to have all the finances and the agreements and the commitments and that's all there. But it needs to also be that you have this beauty as well, Be'ezra Hashem. So next week, God willing, we'll get to the next stages as well, Be'ezra Hashem, and looking forward to continuing.